Welcome to part two of Julia's three-part conversation with Acharya Adam LaBelle.
Now, if we look at the, seed syllables as an inspiration, and generally transform themselves into an imagery that is representative of a lineage.
Right.
What is the lineage? Who holds the lineage? And what kind of devotion or allegiance is expected from what someone would be to begin with? Could be a Jew, could be a Christian, could be a nothing.
Right.
How does the master warrior imagery write through, and what are the commitments that need to be made to that master warrior, particularly in the fourth stage?
Right. Yeah. The simple answer to the question is it's the Shambhala lineage, and the loyalty is to the Sakyong as the holder of that lineage.
What is the Shambhala lineage?
The Shambhala lineage is a global, universal human experience of basic goodness and dignity on the individual level and on the possibility of a social and collective level that has shown up in many different civilizations and cultures throughout history. So in the broadest possible sense, Shambhala is beyond Shambhala. Shambhala erases itself in its universality. That it's something bigger than any particular set of symbols or particular lineage.
But there's a dot, right?
But there's a dot.
Is where Master Warrior arises from.
Yeah, but there's a dot, exactly. And that dot is our particular tradition's manifestation of that universal wakefulness. And things in the human realm take form, take symbols, have a history, have organizational, institutional complexity. And that particular form is, you could say, something that Trungpa Rinpoche carried with him in his being when he left Tibet and came into the modern world and gave birth to it in the form of the Kingdom of Shambhala, the Ashe, the specific teachings that he was giving, and also gave institutional form to that, or you could say political form to that, by evoking this position of the Sakyong. So the Sakyong represents that message of basic goodness and this political center, a focal point, a reference point for people who are inspired by that vision.
And is the bond with the Sakyong a secular or a religious bond?
Yes.
Both?
Neither.
Neither.
Yeah, I think the whole point of Shambhala is to implode this false distinction between secular and religious.
So in principle, you could be a practicing Islam, Muslim.
Absolutely.
And still actually make it to Scorpion Seal?
That would be possible. It would require a Muslim who is also willing to say they were a Buddhist.
But and do they have to say they're a Buddhist, or do they have
to say they're
a Shambhala?
They do, and here's why and here's where, precisely. Up until entering Sacred World Assembly, which, for those of you not in the lingo, Sacred World Assembly is what we used to call Vajrayana Seminary. Up until that point, all of our programs, all of the assemblies, including Warrior Assembly, Enlightened Society Assembly, Datuns, obviously, everything offered in a Shambhala center, require no religious commitment as normally understood, right? There's no point on the path where you're supposed to take refuge and become a Buddhist. There's no point on the path where you're supposed to take the Bodhisattva vow. There are points on the path where you make a commitment to basic goodness by taking the Shambhala vow, and you make a commitment to creating enlightened society by taking the enlightened society vow. But if we wanted to stick to this language of religion, which is questionable, there's no religious commitment up until entering into enlightened society, Sacred World Assembly, or Vajrayana. The Sakyong has been very clear that in order to receive the mind transmission, which is held in the Vajrayana lineage, that he wants people to be willing to commit to say that they're a Buddhist in order to go to Vajrayana.
Okay, so then if we start from that point of people taking a leap into a more... this is the language we have. We have the language of religion.
Yeah.
What lineage does Sakyam Nipam Rinpoche represent within Buddhism? How does he trace it back? I mean, it was easy answer. Could give you an easy answer before, which is Kagyu lineage, right? With some Nyingma flourishments.
Mm-hmm.
But as a Buddhist, giving a transmission within... And the more difficult part, which is actually becoming Vajra Master, what lineage does he represent in that sense? Because that seems to be the question.
Right, it's the question for those of us who are familiar with framing it in that way. Right, if the primary question is, you know, what lineage are you? Are you Kagyu? Are you Nyingma? Are you Gelug? Are you Sakya? If that's the question, then, you know, it becomes slightly unclear exactly whether the Sakyong fits into any of those four lineages.
Well, my question is more that it's, I understand what the Shambhala lineage is.
Right.
Because you have, just exactly as you have explained, you know, someone who is an embodiment of a particular set of principles who are passed either on a familial way, even though, of course, there has to be a teacher-student quality, because it's not just... And here's, you know, someday son, this will all be yours, right? Or daughter. It really is a training, an embodiment of something. But that's quite understandable in terms of the way you describe the path. But if somebody has to become a Buddhist, it makes you wonder, well, all of Buddha Dharma is fundamentally protected by the notion of lineage. But it's an open question.
It is an open question. I mean, because what lineage was Naropa? What lineage was Saraha? You know, what lineage was, lots of figures throughout Buddhist history.
But they developed lineages.
And we are the Shambhala lineage.
Okay, that's what I mean. So at some point, it'd be interesting how Shambhala, at some point, will require a Vajra Master relationship to its own esoteric sacred world tradition that doesn't even have to use the language of Buddhism.
Yeah, and that's the amazing opportunity here, isn't
it? Because the Buddhism word causes a lot of trouble.
It does, and it's so interesting how little trouble it causes in our modern society. Buddhism has become really universally appreciated, accepted. There's a tremendous amount of interest in Buddhism, and there are, of course, people who are part of a religious tradition who would be who are concerned about becoming labeled as a particular religion, and there are people who are opposed, for many good reasons, to being part of any particularly established religion. And I think Shambhala is, you know, definitely playing an interesting trickster role of making us ask precisely these questions. And if we think that we're going to come to simple answers of, you know, it is this religion, it's not this religion, it's this, it's that, I think we're missing the whole possibility here of before the development of the idea of religions, right? The idea of a religion is a modern invention. There were no religions, there were no world religions before the 16th century.
No, but people had a relationship to magic. People had a relationship to life.
Exactly. And that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in relationships to magic and life, to truth, and to wisdom holders who can transmit that.
But exactly, which means at some point, one of the things you guys will have to figure out is at that point of sacred world assembly, how someone doesn't have to be a Buddhist.
I love that question. And there may be a time when the Sakyong feels like that would be helpful. At the same time, the amount of Buddhism that we are currently teaching in our Vajrayana training is, it's obvious. We would be deceptive if we were saying that there isn't a lot of Buddhism. And so I also think to honor the mind transmission, the Vajrayana mind transmission, that has been held in a particular form by Buddhist teachers, that we have to honor the commitment to the Buddha, taking refuge and taking bodhisattva vows in order to receive that thoroughly. So that I think we're bound to that, and I'm very happy we are. So, and it's interesting, there are a lot of people who had no interest in Buddhism, didn't want to become a particularly religious person, but through the path and moving gradually through our path, come to a place where they feel like that's actually already happened. It's natural. And that is always the best way to take refuge, isn't it? That you already realize that you have a connection to the Buddha's lineage.
Yeah, see, that was, I mean, when you had the separation of, you know, you had the, you know, Shambhala path and they had the Buddhist path, the commitment to the master warrior on the Vajrayana was obviously a Vajra master commitment. And just as you're saying, because it is a mind transmission, it's been guarded, you could say, all the way to Vajradhara or all the way to whomever, right?
Right.
And then in the Shambhala tradition, there was the notion that the commitment was a secular commitment of loyalty. Even though, if you look at the Shambhala teachings, they are Vajrayana teachings, but there was a secular tradition of loyalty. And one of the issues that we always had in this, in the development of the Shambhala path, was that we hadn't figured out how to give pointing out instruction, how to give transmission.
Right.
Because the figure of the master warrior as someone who could give pointing out transmission hadn't developed, right? It really hadn't developed. Trungpa Rinpoche died. The region didn't quite pick it up at the time. He died also. And it was kind of like a blank, right? So now the Sakyong is bringing both together, which I think still leaves a lot of issues to be resolved, such as, can you be a non-Buddhist scorpion seal practitioner, and can you be a Buddhist of a different lineage without having to have that same kind of Shambhala lineage Vajra master allegiance to the Sakya. And I think those questions will remain open, and that seems to be very crispy. And it's funny that you talk about food, because I always said, well, either we figure out how to deal with this, particularly the second question for the older students who have allegiances to their Kagyu and Nyingma roots and such, or we're going to have Shambhala feasts will be like satyrs, and we'll have to, you know, dip eggs in salt water for the tears of the warriors that went into the Exodus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's a lot of those tears are already here. You know, I don't think we have to project into the future. There's been a tremendous loss there, and I think just by nature of you as the interviewer and the kinds of listeners to this particular program, these are the most important questions, and they're real, and I don't have a lot of answers necessarily for them. But we have to remember, for the literally thousands and thousands of people coming into Shambhala centers, these are not their questions.
Well,
and I'm not saying that makes it irrelevant, but for thousands and thousands of people coming into Shambhala centers, the question isn't, you know, about a reference to other lineage or other teachers, or when do I have to take this vow or that, or how do I, am I Buddhist or not? It's amazing how rare those questions come up. There is a thirst for genuine teachings and practices. And I think that what we've seen with the way of Shambhala and this current curriculum is a tremendous amount of living waking up that's happening, where there's a lot of good energy, people connecting to powerful teachings and Dharma, and moving through a very authentic and powerful path where Trungpa Rinpoche's mind is alive and well, embodied in his teachings and his words. And we could look at, if you wanted, you asked about the In Everyday Life series, you asked about the Basic Goodness series. ways that is currently manifesting. Because I just, you know, there's something intractable about some of these questions. Right now I'm more interested, frankly, in where the waking up is happening. Just because I don't know how much time we've got in our civilization. And I don't know the people that I'm working with on the ground and on the front lines are amazing people with huge soft hearts going through a very complex and difficult world. And we've got some water to quench a thirst. And I'm really interested in that. Yeah.
So tell me about the Everyday Life and the Basic Goodness series. How does that help answer those questions? How does that quench the thirst?
Good. Well, the first path that we developed was this, what we call the An Everyday Life series. And that was this original work that we did on bringing together some basic Buddhist teachings, basic Shambhala teachings, organizing them into a journey. And the archetypes or the structure we used to make that journey were the four dignities and the three yanas. So three yanas, Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, representing a path of evolution in the Buddhist context. That was how Trungpa Rinpoche taught that three yana or nine yana journey, but held in these three yanas. Then we looked at, well, what are the core, kind of what's the something comparable in the Buddhist teachings that could be a journey, an unfolding journey that moves through stages. And we looked at, of course, the education of the warrior, the verses in the education of the warrior from the Letter of the Black Ashe, and in particular, these four dignities representing these kind of archetypes of how a warrior moves through their journey. And more or less, we connected the meek tiger with the Hinayana, the perky lion with relative bodhicitta, the relative aspects of the Mahayana, the outrageous Garuda with the ultimate aspects of the Mahayana, ultimate bodhicitta or emptiness,
mm-hmm.
and then the wisdom in everyday life with the dragon was connected with the Vajrayana.
So similar to these four stages that you were describing, you were couching the conversation. So it seems like that Everyday Life series is kind of a manifestation of that view of the four stages that you were just describing.
Yeah, in some way there's a little bit of, as Trungpa Rinpoche would say, kind of combing the hair again and again, where you go through the whole journey in a condensed form, and then you kind of repeat that again. You go through that evolution again a number of times. So you're moving through TLGD or, you know, Meek, Perky, Outrageous, Inscrutable. You're getting an overview of the map of the three yanas. So you're getting exposure to what those three yanas mean, some of the core teachings. And then really within the course of, for many people, just a year, year and a half. So the first course in the Everyday Life series is Meditation in Everyday Life. And that is an emphasis on basic meditation. These are often very large courses. There's a huge amount of interest in meditation. We present it in a very simple, accessible way. The core teachings are from Turning the Mind into an Ally and Shambhala's Sacred Path of the Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning basic mindfulness and awareness and working with emotions from the perspective of a meditator. The next is Contentment in Everyday Life. And that's presenting this principle of meek and the Hinayana, where there's an emphasis on gentleness towards oneself or friendly to oneself, an emphasis on basic mindfulness continuing into everyday actions and everyday life, and teaching some of the Four Noble Truths. So we present the core Buddhist teaching of the Four Noble Truths as a way to help really talk about, well, all this talk about basic goodness and mindfulness and gentleness, how does that work with real suffering? And how do we meet suffering in our life in a way that extends this view of basic goodness? So there are other teachings about nowness and working with emotions and basic Buddhist psychology as part of contentment in everyday life. Then there's Enjoy in Everyday Life. There's an emphasis on working with discipline, overcoming doubt, so the core qualities of the perky lion, and bodhicitta, opening the heart. What are the different aspects of bodhicitta? We work with focusing on the four immeasurable practice as our core next practice that we're working on. So meditation and contentment are basic sitting meditation. Then in joy in everyday life with the lion, we start to introduce the four immeasurable practices and the view behind them. Six paramitas are taught, all six, with an emphasis on ethics and on discipline, on sutram. Then with the fearlessness in everyday life, we take that step beyond the conceptual realm. So both tiger and lion are dignities of the earth. But with Garuda, we leap into this space, this soaring quality. So there we present teachings on absolute bodhicitta, overcoming hope and fear, and working with fear. What do we mean by fear? How do we work with it as human beings? The Trungpa Rinpoche's teachings on fearlessness from smile at fear are in that, and as well as real direct instructions on when fear arises in your being, how do you work with that as a warrior? And then connecting that sense of fear with ultimate truth, with emptiness, that groundless vastness that isn't easily opened up if you're a terrified, frightened mind. So that's a very strong course for a lot of people. And then in wisdom in everyday life, we look at the sense of now arising within that space. So we've opened up that ultimate space with fearlessness in everyday life. Then the question is, now what? How do I engage and act in the world? So it's like in the ox herding pictures, the return to the marketplace of form, where we use the principle of the inscrutable dragon as this this warrior that has mastered both the spiritual and the temporal, and bringing that out in real action. So there's emphasis on play, creativity, Buddha nature, Vajra nature, and a brief presentation of what we mean by Vajrayana. As we move into the play and the creativity of the dragon. Then, just to sum this all up, the Everyday Life series, while you're moving through those courses, those are all 5-week evening classes. So 5 nights that you would meet. Some centers do it as weekends, and then sometimes it's done as an intensive, like in a land center like Karma Choling, where you could do the whole contentment in everyday life over the course of 5 days.
And people would be doing Shambhala training as a ground of developing their meditation and their...
Exactly. And while you're moving through those 5 sets of classes, you're going through the 5 levels.
So it's an educational component almost that integrates the meditation with the way, with your life.
Exactly. So okay. As you're moving through that integration of space and openness through the Shambhala training levels, which increasingly are where we're doing most of our deep sitting practice, where there's a lot of silence, there's not a lot of content in teaching, but you're actually doing a lot of sitting for a whole weekend. It's amazing how hard it is for people in our world to take a whole weekend off to sit. I mean, things have really changed. And we ask a lot. It might seem like not so much, but asking people to sit all day Saturday, all day Sunday is huge, huge, and really not easy for a lot of people. So those 5 weekends of silence and those core, beautiful teachings of levels 1 through 5 are the kind of backbone of the non-conceptual silence. And those levels work really well with that map I just drew out about the In Everyday Life series. They integrate fully in. And originally, we wanted them to be prerequisites, but we found that the scheduling was just a mess for people. That it was just a total, you know, logjam. So we've opened it up. You have to complete levels 1 through 5 and the An Everyday Life classes in order to go to what we call Rigdon, which is a weekend led by an acharya where we introduce the principle of Rigdon. And the idea there is, what happens if you actually experience all 4 dignities and all 3 anas? If you bring them together into a simple experience, that is this quality of universal monarch, or the Rigdon taking a seat in vast open space and working with this expression of Ziji, of confidence. So there's a lot of teachings on, it's called unconditional confidence, the Rigdon weekend, which is almost like, you know, if you take this is a little bit maybe not traditional, but if you, let's say you take a tiger, a lion, a Garuda and a dragon, and you blend and you put them in a blender, exactly. Uh-huh. And what do you get? You get a Rigdon. That there's a sense of the Rigdon is he or she who holds, who possesses the glory of tiger, lion, Garuda, and dragon, who possesses the confidence beyond words. And that is what we introduce in the Rigdon Weekend, which is a kind of capping program for people who've moved through levels 1 through 5 and moved through this evolution of the 3 yanas and the 5, the 4 dignities through the Everyday Life series.
You know, the image I get about what a Rigdon is, or any kind of principal deity of a mandala, is where space begins to precipitate.
Hmm, nice.
And it begins to precipitate because there is some magical karmic coincidence that it brings it to the visible. And then you can begin to relate to that. It was always there.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah. And just like unconditional confidence, that confidence which is primordially free is always there. The question is, do we follow and delight in it? And this is a training of learning to follow and delight in that unconditional primordial confidence, which as human beings is our inheritance. And we use the skillful means of the sophistication and the precision of the Buddhist teachings to help unpack what that means. But our core question is not how do we teach Buddhism. Right? The core question is, how do we open up that experience of primordial confidence in human beings? And it turns out that the Buddhist teaching has a lot to offer there. And obviously the Shambhala teachings have a lot to offer there.
And do people go from there to the so-called graduate program, whatever it's called now?
Right. So
when you look at the term on the
just to say, there's also the Basic Goodness series, which we could talk about
service.
In a little bit, you know, because
yeah.
Yeah, I got right. I got a, you know, this is the new product. You got to market it.
The new and improved Basic Goodness.
That's right. So, but the Basic Goodness series is three sets of classes. They are really an introduction, an experiential introduction to the view of Basic Goodness. The first asks the question, who am I? And the reflection is on one sense of self, subjectivity. And there's a very focused, sustained investigation of the skandhas. So it's selflessness from the perspective of Basic Goodness. Selflessness from the perspective of an original and innate wakefulness. And we introduce practices that are basically the 4 foundations of mindfulness, integrated with a very spacious kind of feeling of our present experience, really working especially with self-aggression through this exploration, who am I? Second course is the question is, how can I help? And more of this bodhisattva attitude and really asking this question, what does it mean to be involved with society in the present? And there the core teaching is on bodhicitta and on tonglen as our main practice. But really, and I'm very excited about, we're really focusing on the enemies of the 4 directions, which we talk about as 4 social forces. So working with the world of the professionals, the world of the merchants, the world of the entertainers, and the world of, family. And relatives. And so we really move through these amazing teachings, underutilized, brilliant seeds planted by the Dorje Drodel about what it is like for society to manifest from the cosmic mirror. And in that course, we actually study the lines from the Letter of the Black Ashe. We line by line, we move through this description of from the great cosmic mirror, without beginning and without end, human society became manifest. And what does it mean to see the possibility of a society of cowardice, or the society of warriorship and wakefulness? And we do that not just in abstract, but looking at our own family lives, our own households, our own relationship with wealth and economy, and the neurosis that most of us are totally trapped within around relating with money. We look at the integration of working with entertainment and media, especially things like the internet and technology, which is, consuming our children.
Our capacity to pay attention.
Exactly. And also so amazing. Also amazing. You know, it's a sparkly, wonderful thing. And how do we work with that? And so forth. And the arts and creativity. So that's the second of the basic goodness series. And the third is, the question is, what is real? So the first was, who am I? The second is, how can I help? And the third is, what is real? And this is an exploration of reality from the perspective of basic goodness. What does it mean to say, not just that I'm basically good, like somewhere deep inside my heart, I'm good, and not just to say, oh, society is basically good, you know, somehow society can be enlightened, but the very fabric of reality is basic goodness. What does that mean? And there we rely again on the precision of the Buddhist teachings, and we move through an exploration of the four main philosophical schools of Buddhism, the Vaibhashika, the Sautrantika, the Yogacara, and the Madhyamaka.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that experientially by looking at objects, by asking about the role of perception, by exploring the role of mind, by looking at some of the classical arguments around Madhyamaka. And it's all integrated actually with an ecological element, where the weekly practice is to spend at least 5 to 10 minutes alone outside, doing your practice outside. And Acharya Rockwell has been developing a sit-spot practice where there's a lot of time spent alone observing reality in nature, which is key to our Drala teachings and to whatever we mean by reality. It has something to do with the natural world around us, going beyond our normal conceptual relationships. So when you put these three together, you've got a very focused investigation of subjectivity and sense of self, a focused investigation of interpersonal relationships in society and economy, and you've got an investigation of reality. And so through these three, we're touching on some really key aspects of view and what we mean by basic goodness, and giving a little bit more meat, or beef, if you'd like, or textured soy protein, to this, what we mean by basic goodness, because it's not always so simple, that there's a lot we can explore.
What text do you use in these three? Do you use traditional Buddhist texts that talk about these things? Because that's very much the, you know, Triyana approach altogether.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we mostly use the Sakyong and Trungpa Rinpoche's writings. So, for example, in the Who Am I course, the most focused study is on the chapter of the development of ego, from depending on where you want to source it, from either cutting through spiritual materialism, you know, or the we actually draw it from the sanity we're born with, that book of collected teachings from Trungpa Rinpoche, and then a lot of teachings from these Shambhala Principle, the Sakyong's book, Shambhala Principle.
I imagine in the How Can I Help particularly, right?
How Can I Help, there's a lot from the Shambhala Principle, and then we draw in the How Can I Help course on the Work, Sex, and Money book by the Vijayadhara, which really is about the question of integration with society. And then in the What Is Real course, there are readings from, again, Shambhala Principle, readings from some of Trungpa Rinpoche's teachings, and this is where I'm most interested in bringing in some of the incredible new material that's now available through the Profound Treasury, Trungpa Rinpoche's teachings. So now I've got an incredible resource to draw from in terms of readings for the students. So Twofold Egolessness, for example. There's readings that we currently are doing from other public books, but now with a Profound Treasury, there's a lot we can draw from from the Vijayadhara. We also have readings from Jeremy Hayward's book, Sacred World, where he brings in some of the more environmental, ecological elements. And there's a lot of resources actually out there. So that course could, depending on the community, that could be a much deeper investigation where we would draw on things like Kenpo Sutrin's The Progressive Stages of Meditation on Emptiness. But for some communities, that's not where the people are. They're not necessarily interested in that level of depth of exploration. So there's a way that it can be presented maybe more accessibly and simply. So different communities work with it, and different shastris and teachers work with the Basic Goodness series in a different way.
You are listening to Mosaics on Chronicles Radio, a production of the Chronicles of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Support for this programming comes from our listening audience. To contribute, visit chroniclesradio.com and click on Support This Work. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening to Chronicles Radio. Thank you.